appreciate it. Thank you.
Case number 08-5470, Dorothy Chapman Johnson, appellant, versus Sheila C. Bear, chairman, Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. Ms. Reno for appellant, Ms. Sharshik for appellee.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. If you give me just 1 second. In an effort at keeping these two cases straight, I'll remind you this is the case where Ms. Purnell was the selecting official, and it is a race, age, and retaliation claim. It's a non-selection, as both cases are. The important point in this case is that the selecting official, Ms. Purnell, provides testimony that a reasonable juror could conclude is false, and she does so in four aspects. The first being, she says that, she and the other two panel members came to a consensus that the top two candidates were the two white candidates, Salatich and the ultimate selectee, Quattrone. But Ms. Tice, one of the panel members, vigorously disputes that fact. She says that she was not asked who she preferred. In fact, she said there was no discussion among the panel about the candidates. She was never asked. And in fact, she says that Chappelle Johnson was one of her top two candidates. So that's a material dispute of fact.
She still had Salatich as the top candidate, right?
No, she in her deposition, she says that she had two top candidates, and she couldn't say which one would be number one. She says Dorothy and a young lady who, I think the inference is reasonable, almost conclusive, that she means Salatich was the other person, based on age and other factors.
Could you point out where that is in the record? Because that's not my recollection of
her deposition testimony.
Testimony was that she did not rank Chappelle Johnson as her first choice. And in fact, the finding of the district court is that no one did.
Well, that was a factual finding by the district court at Joint Appendix 74. Line 17 in her deposition, the question is, who do you believe in the process was the most qualified candidate? After the interviews, I had two people. I had Dorothy and another young lady. Do you recall her name? No, I don't. Okay, but then it goes on page 75. She's probed to figure out which one is the top candidate. And the final question sort of clarifies everything, but you didn't have an opinion as to one over the other, talking about the two candidates, and she says no. The other important...
She didn't have Chappelle Johnson as the top candidate.
Right. She had two... Well, she did have her as the top candidate. She had two...
As the top one. Yeah.
Two as the top one, yes. Yes. She had two that were tied. So when... The other point is, though, she says Ms. Purnell didn't ask her recommendation, and she never told Ms. Purnell her recommendations, because Ms. Purnell actually, when she tried to discuss the candidates and say something about one of the candidates, Ms. Purnell said it was not allowed. And so that is highly suspicious, because Ms. Purnell's testimony tries really hard to deflect the focus to this was the panel's consensus decision, when in fact Ms. Tice testifies the panel didn't even discuss the candidates. Mm-hmm. And another of, she says she was not allowed to give input, and she did not give any recommendation. So, you know, why a jury will question, why is Ms. Purnell misrepresenting the way the decision was reached? And as we know from the falsity of the explanation, a jury can infer that discrimination and or retaliation was the real reason. In Georgia versus Leavitt, this court said that generally the falsity of the explanation should be enough to get a plaintiff's claim to a jury. And here it certainly is. The other falsehoods that a jury could find is she claims that she specifically told Mr. Bell and Ms. Tice that they could give input. And she says, you know, I told them that's what they were there for, to give input. She has specific testimony about how there was a discussion. After each interview, they discussed the candidates. And then at the end, there was a summary discussion of all the candidates. Ms. Tice denies all of that. She says there was no discussion, not before, not during the panel, and not after. She says she had no input, and all they did was interview the candidates. Now, Ms. Purnell also claims another falsehood a jury could find is that she says Ms. Tice, who used to be Chappelle Johnson's supervisor, she says that Ms. Tice told her that Chappelle Johnson's duties from 1992 to 1996 consisted mainly of time and attendance matters. But Ms. Tice testifies she didn't say that. She says she hadn't talked to Purnell about Chappelle Johnson since 2000. And Ms. Purnell is specific in saying that during the panel discussions, this was something that Ms. Tice represented to her. And it's another way of Ms. Purnell kind of dismissing Chappelle Johnson's application. She checked the references of the only two white applicants. She uses as a pretext for doing that.
Check the records. You aren't saying, are you, that the decision maker must check the references of everybody or nobody?
No, not saying that at all.
So if the decision maker believes, perhaps mistakenly, that two have emerged as top candidates, it would seem to make sense to check their references, right?
It would if she mistakenly believes that, but a jury could find that she, it's not a mistake, that it's not an honest mistake, but that it is a discriminatory reason that she checks the references of the two white candidates.
Well, I mean,
by the fact that she's misrepresenting.
You don't have the, we have a third panelist, right?
Yes, Mr. Bell.
Okay, so, and there's no contention that the third panelist put the plaintiff first or second, right?
Right.
So, is there anything, let's assume that everything Ms. Tice says is absolutely correct. Why is it suspicious to look at the candidates who have emerged as top two in the opinion of two out of three?
Well, the most suspicious thing that's done is that Ms.
What about, is there anything suspicious in that?
Okay, I don't like to disaggregate the evidence from the whole, but I think given everything else, it is suspicious that the lies that she tells result in her checking the references of the two white candidates.
Well, let's assume that everything Ms. Tice says is absolutely correct. It still would be the case that two emerge as leading candidates in the view of a majority of the panelists, and those references are checked.
Actually, Ms. Purnell, at one point, Mr. Bell says he said Quattrone was the top, and that Ms. Purnell said Quattrone was the top, and that Ms. Tice said that Ms. Salatich was the top. Okay. And that's why they checked Quattrone and Salatich. But that's not true. Purnell didn't give Salatich as a top candidate. She didn't give anybody as a top candidate because she wasn't asked. That's what she testified to. So if everything Ms. Tice says is true, then the only person that Bell, if everything that Ms. Tice says is true, Ms. Purnell made the selection decision to check the two references on her own. Because Ms. Purnell says, I didn't give any recommendation.
Why that's evidence of anything very much.
What
yeah, you switch alternately between Tice and Purnell, which makes
Tice
it confusing.
Tice, one time.
Tice didn't give any recommendation.
Right.
According to Tice, if you believe Tice, okay. And a jury can believe Tice, she gave no recommendation. Therefore, the only recommendation was Quattrone. So why did she also check Salatich's reference? I mean, it's all suspicious. There's a lot of falsehoods. And the facts are she checks the references of only the two white candidates out of a pool of many African-American candidates. And she checks those two references
There are four total candidates here, right?
Right.
Okay. What was the race of the fourth one?
Black. So she checks the references of the two white candidates, and she uses as her explanation for that, well, the panel recommended these two candidates, and Ms. Tice says, no, I didn't give a recommendation, I wasn't asked for a recommendation. So if you believe Ms. Tice, the panel made no recommendation, and Ms. Purnell decided on her own to check the references of Ms. Quattrone and Ms. Salatich, both of whom were white. So from the falsity of the explanation of how the decision got made, a reasonable jury could conclude that Ms. Purnell is lying to cover up an unlawful motive.
When you say Tice made no recommendation, are you saying she didn't give anybody her notes or anything from the interview? Because she does say in at least one of these declarations, that her top choice for the position was Calista Salatich. So, I mean, you know, that is part of the record. Now, I think there might be a distinction between her saying, did we discuss it, or whether or not Purnell actually had the benefit of her choices.
Well, she testifies at her deposition that she didn't give Purnell her top two candidates, and she testifies. I mean, there's a conflict even in Tice's testimony, because in her deposition, right, she says the two were equal, and in her declaration, you know, when she's being interviewed by the agency, she says that Salatich was her top candidate. So, I mean, I think a jury is free to believe her testimony over her written and prepared affidavit. I think that would be reasonable for a jury to believe her that she had two top candidates and that she wasn't asked for those two top candidates. Now, whether Ms. Purnell somehow decided that Salatich was her top candidate, I mean, I don't know where she would have gotten that from. The Appellee has not explained exactly where Purnell came to that conclusion. So I think that's up to them to clarify and explain and articulate fully. What we've done is develop evidence that...
I don't know why this is particularly suspicious, though. Quattrone was the candidate selected, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Quattrone was the top-rated candidate of the other two, correct? And so there was a background check of Quattrone and then a background check of one other person, but Quattrone is selected.
But there's not a background, it's a reference check. There's not a reference check of Chappelle Johnson, even though...
But Quattrone was the favorite going into the reference checks, correct?
But why was she the favorite? Because Purnell's lying about... A jury could conclude that Purnell is lying about how the discussions went, because Tice says there was no discussions, that she wasn't even allowed to give input.
But there was a turning over of notes, right? And so it's
there's no notes in the appendix. I did not see it.
I realize that, but at least there's a certainly potentially at least an ample basis for Purnell concluding that Quattrone had emerged as the leader.
I don't think there's an ample basis. They haven't articulated that.
Well,
all
there is in the record, though, a description of what their selection process looks like.
And of what it's supposed to look like.
What it's supposed to look like.
But that doesn't mean...
One thing that it suggests there is that all the notes are to be turned over, correct?
And there's no evidence in this case that that happened. And, in fact, in the other case...
Which happened?
That the notes were turned over.
That's what Tice says. I did not retain any interview notes. Everything was given to Shirley.
Right, but we don't have those notes.
I understand, but for the proposition as to whether the notes were turned over, we have your favorite witness saying that.
Right, but we don't have the defendant, who has the burden to articulate their legitimate reason, saying that she based it on paper. We have Purnell saying she based it on a discussion and verbal recommendations. That's what Purnell testifies to. Ms. Tice testifies that that's not true. Ms. Purnell says we talked and reached a consensus on the top two candidates. That's what she testifies to. A jury could find that's not true.
Sorry. Thank you, Ken.
Okay. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Barbara Sarshak, and I represent the FDIC. I'd like to point this court first to page 80 of the joint appendix, paragraph 6, which is where Ms. Tice said that she would have rated Ms. Chappelle Johnson as being the second most qualified. I'd also like to point this court to the fact that the record fully shows why Ms. Purnell believed that Ms. Quattrone, based on her interview responses, was the best qualified applicant. It is undisputed in this case that no member of the interview panel would have selected Ms. Chappelle Johnson as the first choice for this position.
Well, it's not quite undisputed because we have two different positions by Tice. One of which would seem to rank
it is
at the top.
Okay, right? And until the argument this morning, I thought it was undisputed, and I stand corrected,
well,
Your Honor.
The testimony that we went through.
Yes. It is certainly undisputed, though, Your Honor, that two of the three believed that Ms. Chappelle Johnson was not either of the top two candidates, and the third panelist would have put Ms. Chappelle Johnson as one of the top two, but it's nowhere does she say that she considered Ms. Chappelle Johnson to be the top. She says in one place that Ms. Chappelle Johnson was second, the other place she didn't decide between them. It is also undisputed that no one in the selection, in the selection process believed Ms. Chappelle Johnson to be the best applicant for the position. Perhaps Ms. Tice, in her deposition, believed that either one of the top two would have been the best, but not clear for Ms. Chappelle Johnson. So it is difficult to say that there is false testimony by the selecting officer that would allow a reasonable jury to infer discrimination in this case. All of the key facts that support the legitimate non-discriminatory explanation given by the FDIC are undisputed. To the extent that there is any difference between Ms. Tice and Ms. Purnell as to whether there was, for example, a discussion of the candidates during the interview or not, that's a minor difference in recollection that came out 3 years later in depositions, 3 years after this action was taken, that's the kind of minor difference in recollection that happens all the time.
The determination whether someone's best qualified in this process has subjective qualities to it, doesn't it? Because it's based in part on the interview and the reaction to the interview.
Yes, Your Honor.
So it's, I guess it's just an oddity of the case law that we treat this rating as some kind of scientific conclusion that's been devised through a very neutral process, but in fact it's subjective. There could be discrimination in the fact that someone's rated the best person after the interviews. You interview four people and two are of one race and two of another, and you may say, well, I think the person who answered the questions best were the two white people, and then you come into court and say, oh, they did the best, they had the best scores, and that has this scientific veneer to it. But what about the discrimination in the interview process? How is a court supposed to get at that?
Your Honor, I agree with you that as long as there is some element of subjectivity, there is a possibility for discrimination. This particular process that was used here was designed to minimize that potential. All of the applicants were treated the same. They were given a structured interview where all of them were asked the same questions. So there's no possibility for gotcha questions asked of people in a prohibited, in a protected category. All of them were evaluated according to the same criteria. The reasons that were given afterwards for making the selection were not the reasons that smack of subjectivity. They were not, oh, the selectee was nice.
That might just mean the witnesses were good. I mean, that normally, isn't discrimination ultimately a credibility assessment for the most part? In other words, you're looking into someone's demeanor and what they say and saying, did they do this for the reasons they are articulating, or are they doing it for some other conscious or subconscious reason that smacks of discrimination? How's that supposed to be determined except by a jury?
You're right, Your Honor, that the ultimate question, as this court has said, is did the defendant discriminate in a legally prohibited way? But summary judgment is available and is given all the time where the district court finds that based on the record that has been produced by both sides, no reasonable jury could find discrimination. And that's what the district court properly held here. The district court looked at an extensive record and found abundant evidence that all supported the FDIC's legitimate, non-discriminatory reason for not selecting Ms. Chappelle Johnson. If the court has no further questions, I respectfully ask this court to affirm the district court. Thank you.
Ms. Brewer, you had gone far over your time, but we'll give you 1 minute.
I think 1 minute is all I need to say that whether there was a minor difference in recollection or whether somebody is lying is a credibility issue that only a jury can decide, and I urge you to look.
You aren't arguing that under Reeves and ACCA, any discrepancy, however trivial, requires that the case go to the jury.
Probably not if it's trivial.
As your champion witness has discrepancies within her own statements.
And that's a credibility issue for the jury to decide, because sure. Ms. Purnell has a lot of credibility issues. She says that she told...
The cases don't bear out the proposition that the most trivial discrepancies justify... Mm-hmm. Denial of summary judgment.
Well, here we're not talking about trivial discrepancies. We're talking about the process, the deliberation process, and the process by which the decision was reached. And also, I think when you find that a selecting official is lying. Jury does not have to find that these are minor differences in recollection. They can find that she's lying. You get to ask the question, why is she lying about the process by which she reached her decision? And unless there's some other reason out there explaining that, that gets you to a jury. I think talking about the process of how you reach a decision is not trivial.
Thank you.
Thank you.